folks. Welcome to TIYA After Dark. This is the premium feed for This Is Your Afterlife, where anything goes. Thanks for listening, being part of the Patreon. I don't run ads, and your support helps me make the main show and avoid another coma. And today, did you know that, Ian? Did you know that I was in a coma? Okay, cool. You know that part. Cool. I don't need to.
I just made a face because it's a crazy thing to hear somebody say. But
yeah, it's kind of a, I mean, honestly, kind of a threat to the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very much so. But that was Ian Ryan and then Jake Serwin from Podcasty For Me, who've come on to talk about Exorcist 3. Thank you guys for coming on.
Hello.
Our pleasure. Excited to be here. Excited to monitor you and your health for at least 2 hours.
Yeah. We're
gonna keep them alive, folks.
I'm looking to taste some blood.
We're competing influences, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the thing I wanted to start with as a way of getting to know you all, because I've DM'd with Jake a bit, but Ian, you and I have not spoken. But I'm hoping this can be a...
I think that changes tonight.
I hope so.
Me too. Yeah, this could be big for us. We'll see.
You can mediate, though, man, if you want.
Yeah.
I'd love to start without talking about the movie and just see if we could all, a faith-related question, talk about our relationship and the evolution of our relationship to Pete Holmes.
Oh, wow. Okay, all right.
They call him, what do they call him, the big boss down there? The main guy? What is... What is the Gemini killer called?
The master.
The master. Pete Holmes, the master.
He's somebody that connects us all. When we talk about them, we're talking about Pete Holmes, TJ Miller.
His web.
Who else is in the mix?
His wife.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet Lady Val.
Duncan Trussell, is he still alive? He's still around?
He's become a real big Peter Thiel head.
Oh, that makes sense, wow. Kind of.
The Antichrist.
In that Elephant Graveyard video that everyone was loving, it talked about Duncan Trussell.
Okay.
Yeah, steering rightward. But that's not who we're talking. We're talking about Holmes.
Peter Holmes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, this is an alleged comedian. no, come on. I mean, I've laughed at some of his stuff.
Oh, I think, sure. Well, I hope so. We listened for years. I would like to say we laughed. Yeah, this is...
Yeah. To the You Made It Weird podcast. I even went to, I'll tell you this, I went to one of the pilot tapings of his talk show for free.
Ooh.
Over there at the Warner.
Those weird long monologues.
Lot. Yeah, and he was like, well, to distinguish my talk show, we're going to sit on bar stools at like a two-top.
Right.
Which, like, I don't know if that ended up in the actual show that aired. I didn't watch it.
I watched it, yeah.
Yeah? The Midnight Show, is that what it was called?
I have no... Yeah, I don't remember the name at
all. I actually think Ian and I, might know someone who wrote on it, and all of their jokes were very funny.
Yep.
Is what I've heard. I haven't seen the show, but I heard that they were funny. I gotta get my lies straight. I mean, look...
Can we give some
background
on this guy? What's the deal?
Yeah.
Fill people in case they weren't keeping it crispy 10 years ago.
Oh, God. Visceral reaction. I don't know, Dave. Do you wanna take this?
Sure. Okay, yeah. Pete Holmes, American comedian. He did. Yeah, he was part of that group in Chicago, right?
Right.
He's not from Chicago, but he and I know it as Kumail Nanjiani and T.J. Miller, and not really Hannibal, because Hannibal was like kind of part of a separate crowd.
Right.
But they all did an open mic. I think it was called like the Red Lion or the Lion's Head Pub. It's not there anymore in Chicago. And so that crew of guys came up, and I knew, got introduced to Pete Holmes. I was going to say Pete and then cringed at referring to him by his first name.
Sure.
But I listened to that first album. It was like Surprised by Wonder or Amazed by Wonder. And I was like, oh, wow, this is like... really funny. That it was like a looseness, a naturalness to it, and like the thing that now drives me nuts, this like meta if you're not listening to me, are you listening? Are you hearing what I'm saying? If you're not laughing, you're not picturing it, was like revelatory to me at the time.
He's one of these guys who, and Ian and I met it at UCLA, which is a college in Los Angeles, and spent a good amount of our time together while there on the Sunset Strip, the world famous Sunset Strip, where you've got a couple of comedy clubs. You got the Comedy Store, which is the one that was run by Dinah Shore. Is that right? Or booked by
Mitzi Shore?
Mitzi Shore. Mm-hmm. Who's Dinah Shore? Yeah. Somebody else.
I don't know.
Someone out Hanukkah there. Song. I think she probably died in the 30s. But it was so that was like the that was the kind of leather jacket like your big comics. Let's call them.
Yes. Now they're just called comics.
Yes, predominantly your bigot comics. Your guys who are like, I'm tough. I'm Nick DiPaolo. I'm Joe Rogan. I'm Chris D'Elia. Whatever.
Dave Attell. Yeah.
Dave Attell.
We weren't there. We never slept in my life.
Down the street.
Significantly more flanneled up. Yeah. Where were we?
Down the street at Meltdown Comics.
Yeah.
Which this is where this was Chris Hardwick territory. A different Chris who's been accused. Uh-huh. There's a Chris. Every comedy place has a Chris, and they've been accused of doing something. And they would do. This is where Kumail and Jonah Ray's show, the name of which escapes me now, was it just called the Meltdown?
Nerd Melt.
You're right.
And
you don't have to bury that, Ian. If you know the right answer, you can
look. I like to sneak in a little thing that makes me sound smart but polite in the background.
This is where like Harmontown, Dan Harmon's show, was recorded every week. And this is like they would. One of the big alt rooms in LA. And this is where the comics who like support trans people and are still. Pederasts. That's where they do stand up. Yeah. Uh-huh. But Pete Holmes is this guy who, like, I think did genuinely have the juice to like straddle both. And there's a couple people who could sort of do both, who could be kind of brainy and nerdy and like you know, not outwardly homophobic enough to play the room for the people with like Criterion.com login at the nerd show, and then could also just like be loud and like write clear actual jokes that they could do to like drunk people at the Comedy Store. Marin, probably the most famous and most successful of this type of comedian.
As I think Pete would say on his podcast, he would say going to the clubs is like doing like strength training, you know,
right?
And then performing in the alt rooms is am I giving you flashbacks?
Yeah. I'm gonna throw up.
It's like doing an aerobic exercise.
Green lights. So
sorry.
And Pete Holmes. Then he's.
I'm trying to ex. I am. It is lit. I didn't actually even think of it in these terms, but this is an actual exercise.
This is God. This is, and that's why it's hurting. That's why I'm throwing up.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing we're not in the same room. There is a big window behind me, though, so that I might make use of that later. But Pete Holmes, instead of being the Marin like salty, bitter New York guy, he is like a recovered Christian guy who's kind of like coming at it from, instead of, you know, Marin's like the bastard who sort of softened, and Pete Holmes is like the nice puppy
Midwestern
dog who's like trying to be a bad boy
went
now.
Bad. Yeah.
And he did his own show that was like Marin's, except he's a bad interviewer because he just talks about himself. Mm-hmm. And he would joke that it was called he wanted to call it the What the Heck podcast.
Yes.
I remember that one. And he would just talk about like the five ideas he had.
Really three, I think, right?
Oh, God, there literally were three. No,
sex.
But I mean like,
I mean,
he literally
sex
had
God was his book, right?
He had like five things he ever wanted to say is what I mean. Not the topic. Because he was like, I've tried to forget them, but basically like we all have sexual hangups, enormous discovery by this man.
Yeah.
And you should like, because he would, you know, he would like to exercise his own sexual demons. He bought the Playboy magazine that he used to hide from his parents, and now he puts it on his coffee table to be like, I'm not afraid of this anymore. And I don't know, some other stuff. What else did he do?
He did Crashing, which is one of I hated it so much I had to stop hate watching it.
Yeah, this is
because it was infiltrating my home, and my partner was like, I think this is like bad for you to be.
Yeah, he tried to do his own show about, you know, where like the successful guy plays himself before he was successful, and everyone's telling him you're never gonna make it, so he gets to just and they shot all of that on 35mm.
Oh my god!
I mean, it was sort of a Louis derived hyper realist.
Louis is another one of those guys who could play both rooms, and I forgot about him because of self preservation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think Pete Holmes. Look, he is the type of guy that if you're talking to him for 2 minutes at a party, he's going to bring up some sort of challenging conversation starters that are going to try to get you to question what you take for granted in terms of religion, right? When he had atheist guests, he would try to talk to them about, well, sort of like, well, what then, like, you know, where do you get meaning from? Or like, what about these things, to sort of push back on him? And if he had religious guests, then he would hit him with maybe some of the stuff we'll get into today, but like a problem of evil or whatever, or something he heard on Radio Lab that week, or something he heard somebody else say they heard on Radio Lab that week, probably.
Right.
But he, I don't know. Did we just age out of him? Did we all wake up? What happened?
It's
probably right around Crashing time for me too. What was that? 2015.
I think I aged out. It was very clear that he never read a book, or if he did read a book, he read the Ram Dass book again.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
He had no. I mean, I think as I got into like dialectical materialism, I had no room for Pete Holmes in my life. Although, Ian, you were reading some theory stuff at the same time you were listening to Holmes.
I think I just appreciated a guy who came out of the Midwest milieu, but was maybe questioning some of the things he had taken for granted, and also was a little bit silly. Yeah. So it's like a crossover of things that were appealing.
Silly. I did laugh at the show. I remember, you know, and like,
which show? Oh, the
his podcast. Like, okay, it could be funny sometimes.
Sure. I remember listening to, speaking of, the Duncan Trussell episode, and I was traveling like an hour and 15 minutes each way for work every day to do you know McMaster Car?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It was that place. It's a industrial factory. It's where like every janitor, you know, gets their screws.
Yeah. They make bolts and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I was going to Elmhurst, Illinois every day. So tired. I wasn't smoking weed all day every day yet, but I was listening to the Duncan Trussell episode of You Made It Weird.
That lasted you. I had two straight weeks of commutes, right?
I had the thought, exactly, that this is an exorcism right now. This is really fucking embarrassing. The thought was, whatever because I was questioning my own spirituality, grew up evangelical, and I'm, you know, no longer that. And was like, whatever my spirituality is, it has to include room for the stuff that Duncan Trussell is saying on
you mean mushrooms. It had to include room for mushrooms.
Man,
everybody who does DMT sees the same purple guy. You know, like
yes.
It's because they heard about the purple guy and they're expecting to see the purple guy.
So that was my experience. And in terms of when I think, well, he was also, I went to see him in Chicago. I thought I would have a moment, you know, in the line afterward, because it was right as I was like transitioning from improv to stand up. And I knew he had done that. And I was like, you know, how did you do that? And he just said something generic, like keep doing it, go to a lot of open mics you know, which is, you know, to be fair, not about as good of advice as any. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and
yeah.
I think practice. In the process of, you know, maybe it was almost dying, going into a coma, realizing my life was too short and not needing to listen to You Made It Weird anymore, was just like, you know, this is, I've done some comedy. I'm not really entertained by this guy. there's a charming amount of talking over your guests. Mm-hmm. And there is, and it's, I think the line is different for everybody, but most people, I would say Pete Holmes crosses the line.
I think that's true.
Yeah. And look, I'm hardly the man to criticize someone talking over their podcast interlocutor. But I guess on our show, we at least have a topic that's not purely the guest. The guest on his show, the guest is the topic.
Well, he's the topic and the guest is there.
Ostensibly,
to
sort of assist. Today I'm yelling at this person.
Yeah.
I guess it's interesting that I was drawn to this man whose whole thing is like, I used to be religious and now I'm opening my mind to a pretty limited set of other ways of looking at the universe.
Because you, Jake, are not, you didn't grow up, no, you're like kind of Jewish, maybe?
I mean, hold on. First of all, you can't say that.
I'm sorry.
Let me make sure the menorah's out. My dad's side of the family's Jewish. My mom's side is like sort of Episcopalian, but like, her dad was like beaten by nuns and so swore off of all religion. And so like there was none of it in the house. My dad wasn't, my dad doesn't give a shit about Judaism. Yeah.
But you're allowed to say that. I mean, Jesus Christ.
And I'm bad with money. So clearly it didn't take. You can cut that out if you want or leave it in.
You guys have a Patreon as well, we should say. That's important for people to know at this point.
Yeah. I am fully circumcised, though I do like to clarify. Mm-hmm. Not just half.
Which you can find out on that. I think that's one of the rewards
new tier
on your Patreon. Yeah. Yes.
And that's what they gave me. They gave me a new tier of the sort of a split level effect. But yeah, I don't know what drew me to this guy, because like, I didn't have any of these hangups to let go of, besides the normal kind of ambient, like, sexual anxieties and
sure,
Protestant work ethic shit that were, you know, everything you pick up from TV. But you guys,
but Ian, you did, right? Like, what was your, like, do you have like a soundbite of your sort of religious background as a way of maybe sliding into the actual fucking movie
sure
we're here to talk about?
Yeah. Happy to do it. So I had a mom whose parents were both types of religions, as far as I knew, Protestant and Catholic. So her
the full spectrum.
Yep, they got them all. Her dad was Catholic and her mom was from the South. So some variation, I think, of Baptist she had grown up. So when she was a kid, she did double services on Sunday. She would do the mass and the Protestant church. Yep, she did 2 days. Yeah, she was really good at football.
Roger Clemens.
So I grew up in the Presbyterian Church of Menlo Park, subsequently made famous by Steph Curry.
Which is sort of an interesting place to be religious.
Yeah, it was a weird
Silicon
crossover.
Valley. Yeah,
that's exactly right. So it was ostensibly kind of liberal leaning. But for those who aren't familiar with Presbyterianism, it has some sort of like more hardcore academic pieces to it, where there's a lot of like textual analysis and some specific rules that people are interested in. And I was at church probably 4 times a week as a kid, between choir services, Bible group, and like cool youth group church. And then also... Yeah. I worked there for a time in high school, setting up.
Did your cool youth
classes.
Group church have a name?
Well, we had, we did, yes.
The
we had
Rock.
Multiple.
Ours was Waterline.
Oh,
Waterline.
God.
That's good, actually. I don't know what that means. That's like, you judge.
I don't remember exactly. It was something about God rises the water. I don't know.
That's where you're supposed to, where the youth pastor puts his eyeliner to.
Right. I mean, we had all the we had Stu, and we had all these guys who were guitar playing, surfing.
Oh yeah.
And then sometimes
did you play in the band? I forget. In the worship band?
I was in the choir, so that was another reason that I was at church. And then I briefly played guitar in the band. And then I also ran the slideshow during the services sometimes.
Ooh,
so.
AV for yep. Christ. Did yep. you do the trick? Did you do the worship band trick where if you forget what you're supposed to do, you just pretend you've caught the spirit and like put, yeah. lift your hand up? Yo.
Yeah. I don't think I ever did the trick, but it's a classic.
I have a friend who played bass in the worship band. He was like, yeah, wow. Sometimes I just forget or I'd be tired and I just pretend to be really, you know, taken with it.
That's great.
Wow. I had never known that that was a trick. I guess I just knew industrious enough people who were like, yeah, these
might have been my friend
worship
Philip.
Band maybe songs my, maybe aren't Philip's, that hard to learn.
Yeah. Maybe Philip's the only guy who ever did that. I don't know.
No, I'm outing him. I think that's famous. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay. And, well, that's a good. Oh, yeah. No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry. And then I went to a Catholic high school, and about halfway through high school, I was leading my own Bible study. And studying like not just the primary text, but like secondary exegesis pretty intensely.
Wow.
And then I just basically all of a sudden felt like didn't think there was a God anymore. And this happened probably too late because I've mentioned on our podcast that I did ultimately win a special blue ribbon award for one person in each graduating class who is basically the most faithful person.
Champion
in
of
the,
faith. Yeah. What was it called?
After you'd already lost your...
Yeah, so faith. This was a source of great humor for my friends who are aware of this. But
Was there a name?
Sorry, go ahead. No, I mean, it was just the blue ribbon. It was like, and oh, I had a little sash for graduation.
And you recently won that again for being a delicious ice cream.
That's right. Yeah. And
well, that's good. So you were like a William Peter Blatty Catholic.
Yeah. I was all the way in. And then I ultimately did kind of a minor in philosophy in college. So some of pieces of it stuck with me. The things, the areas of interest have stayed there, I think, lifelong.
Areas of interest being what exactly?
I think moral attitudes, yes. systems that might allow people to function in a more humanitarian way or make sense of the universe.
How to be a good person, basically.
Yeah. And like, ontologically, how do we understand the things that exist around us and make sense of them and systems that, you know, give us access to those things through the limits of our human perception, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that.
Sure.
Should we try to understand the plot of Exorcist 3?
Let's do it. Yeah.
I think we should. That sounds great. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not like looking forward to summarizing this movie exactly. Movie analysis plot discussion is not my favorite part. And I don't think it's particularly important.
No, I mean, I think if you're listening to this not having seen the film, you're being
which please
weird.
Do please keep listening. Yeah. Don't stop listening.
Okay, yeah, but like, if you want to know what happens, you should watch the movie. If you don't care, then you don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But okay, so I'm gonna try to keep it brief. Exorcist 3, second sequel to The Exorcist, focuses on a detective, Lieutenant Kinderman, played by George C. Scott. Yeah.
This is the Lee J. Cobb character from the first movie, which I have seen this movie multiple times, and every time I have to remind myself that it's supposed to be Lee J. Cobb.
I've seen this movie more than the first Exorcist. So my notes to myself about The Exorcist, which I finished watching earlier tonight, were
this is reminding me a lot of
different guy
three.
Plays different guy plays Kinderman. George C. Scott, and we're gonna use characters and actors' names interchangeably, I think. Especially for Brad Dourif, who plays the Gemini Killer. Father Damien Karras, who's from the first one, who is in the same body as the Gemini Killer. He's Jason Miller, the actor, is credited as Patient X. So it's, but certainly Kinderman sees this guy as Father Karras, who in the first Exorcist was sort of possessed by the demon and jumped out the window and died.
Right.
And murders start happening again. There's and the signs of the murders are people are being decapitated, There's a little black kid at the dock of the bay, but the fucking
he's like
the river,
the river, the side bank of the river, or whatever. Yeah.
And I, it very intentionally, we need to mention this child's race, which we'll get to
thing in the film
later.
Yeah.
Then there's a priest who is hearing someone at confession. And then the third death is Father Dyer, which was also in the first movie.
I mean, that
briefly.
Was bound to happen. Right? Nominative determinism.
I mean, yes. Yeah. Well said. Thank but, but so Father Dyer and he's played by Ed Flanders and okay. I'm not going to comment on performances. I'm going to keep going.
He's replacing another, that character is in,
but barely in the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think these are cause Blatty wrote the novel and he adapted his own novel to the screenplay of The Exorcist, the first film. And now he's getting to direct. So he's like sort of, I think, bringing some of his favorite novel characters, the ones I assume he probably would have liked to see more of in the first film. They're now getting the spotlight a little bit.
And my understanding of this is that he started writing what became Exorcist 3 as a screenplay and then turned it into a novel. And it did get published as a novel, but then he turned it back into a screenplay.
Right.
Which the novel was called Legion. He didn't want it to be an Exorcist movie.
Right.
Have either of you watched the Legion cut, the director's cut?
I have not.
I watched
you
both.
Have, Ian.
I watched both in preparation for today. There's
it's like made out of like weird levels of source quality, right?
It's easy to tell where the additions are because they're very poorly. Which is kind of
splicing.
Impressive in a way. It's like, I kind of appreciate that they're like, but we want to try this, this much worse film quality. It's worse lit. It kind of really makes you realize how lighting and effects dependent the Brad Dourif performance is, which is interesting because it's such a great performance. But Ian, do you have a thought, thumbs up or thumbs down on the director's cut?
Well, I think it's for me, because in part of the obvious like transfer quality differences, it's kind of impossible to view like a movie. You're sort of, it's like a BTS sort of area. Mm-hmm, on our podcast, we covered Exorcist Dominion, the Paul Schrader film, and then which was sort of made simultaneously with another Exorcist.
Yeah, and the Rennie Harlan's version, there were like competing versions. Basically, it got taken away from Schrader. Rennie Harlan came in and like finished, but almost sort of redid it from the ground up. And then that one ate shit. So then the studio basically decided, well, we kind of can just get free money if we put out the Schrader version also.
Right.
Which is kind of a fascinating movie.
And it is, but it has some aspects of the same thing where there's like sudden dips in quality and there's like a custom made soundtrack and stuff that goes
There's really, sort of really
semi charming, but also ridiculous.
There's some CGI hyenas that are clearly not fully baked.
Windows Movie Maker. Yeah.
Amazing. But so you just reserve judgment of the director.
I think, for me, I think it's hard. I guess if you're thinking about just the things that are occurring on screen, I was probably 50-50. Some of the choices are interesting. Some of it, I think, there are things that are sort of like mentioned in the non-director's cut that we get to watch play out on screen in the Legion cut.
Is it clear that the Legion cut is Blatty trying not to make an obvious Exorcist sequel? Okay, so
I would say that's the big difference. Okay. Is there is no exorcism at the end.
There's no Nicole Williamson.
Exactly. There's no Father Mourning. Right.
The guy who never interacts with anyone else.
Yeah. Which, for my money, so I'll plant the flag and say, fuck the Legion cut. I love the theatrical. And if I had seen the director's cut first, we would not be here discussing this movie.
Like, this is a strong take.
Oh, the other thing I should say, this movie has changed my body. Whoa. Because I don't know. This is going to be hard because the way I'm going to maneuver a tattoo in front of you all.
Okay. Oh, whoa, shit.
Scary
from the
tattoo.
I have the weapon, the murder weapon from the movie tattooed on my body, which was kind of I just wanted a tattoo. And I recently, I think a month or two after seeing this movie, got that. And it's one of the littlest regrets I have in my whole life.
I mean, I think it's a kind of a nice sneaky horror movie tattoo because somebody could see that and just think you're really into gardening.
They think I'm a gardener. So either, I'll it could be a master gardener sort of. They either think I'm a secret Nazi or they think I am more in line with the racial politics. Either way,
you're a bucket
to get lumped into.
You're kind of a recent like spooky dark stuff guy, right? Isn't that new for you?
It is new for me. I got into it because it's like a very clear boom 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 causation thing, which is, have either of you read Everything for Everyone, the Oral History of the New York Commune 2052 to 2072?
No.
Okay. Incredible book. I'll buy you both copies and send it to you if you want. The authors are Emmy O'Brien, who wrote a book on family abolition, and Iman Abdel Hadi, who teaches at the University of Chicago and has been in the news a lot, like organizing for Palestinian.
Right. Yes.
They're both great episodes of This Is Your Afterlife. And that book I loved, and I was just craving more because it is it's an speculative oral history, which is really, really fun. And I was craving more like near future utopian dystopian stuff.
Right.
And for whatever reason, the first thing that occurred to me was to watch the Purge movies.
Oh, those movies are good as fuck.
They are good as fuck.
They're so good.
I was
good.
Not expecting. And I started with in my mind, the worst one, which is the most recent one.
The Purge.
Is it Final Purge? Is that what it's called?
The Forever Purge. The one that's in Texas.
Forever Purge. Mexico one. And horrible. But then
not the best.
Those middle three,
yeah.
Anarchy, Election Year, and the fourth Purge movie entitled The First Purge.
Yeah, I mean, I think The First Purge is great. Of course, you have to start with The First Purge, but then I think once you get to The First Purge, it's really good.
The First Purge is, in my mind, the ranking is The Purge Anarchy number one,
okay.
The First Purge number two, Purge Election Year number three, The Purge Forever Purge.
I watched them in deep lockdown, so I
same.
The Anarchy and Election Year are quite blurry for me. I may have watched them in the same day.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that really stands out to me is The First Purge, and it ends with the Kendrick Lamar song All Right, and I was like, they actually know exactly what they're doing, and that's like, you know, ties into what Romero was doing with Night of the Living Dead, and so, I mean, this is like, you know, some great cultural commentary via horror movie. Those movies are great.
Yeah, so that is what got me. I was like, okay, I'm going to like delve into horror movies, which as I look at the history, it's not like I like – this is why I enjoy you guys' show, because I feel like I'm getting – speaking of seeing the movie, I've seen 20% of the movies you guys talk about on the show. I don't watch the movie
before I listen to the podcast. Yeah, I've heard that from other people too. Makes me feel, first of all, you should watch them. I enjoy.
Whatever, dude.
But it's nice to know that we're providing, you know, there's something to be gleaned outside.
It's coherent even
without
that.
It's not just marginalia.
Well, when you're sharing about a bus driver who wrote the words thug life on children's bellies and a sunburn made it so that even when the marker washed off, those kids had the words thug life on them. It's hard to
Grenada veteran.
There's valuable stuff in there, even if you're not getting all the movie commentary. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's a delicate dance that we do, the podcaster, in talking about the topic and then also just sharing of ourselves, cutting of our flesh.
And the risk is Pete Holmes.
Mm-hmm. That's the danger. Yeah, that's the cliff.
We should put his head on a pike outside of town to warn people about.
yeah, yeah.